Bonsoir, and thank you for joining E*TRADE's first quarter 2015 earnings call conference call. During the call today, our Chief Executive Officer, Paul Idzik, Chief Risk Officer, Michael Pizzi, and Chief Financial Officer, Matthew Audette. Today's call may include forward-looking statements which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures, and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to our earnings release, furnished with a Form 8K and our 10Ks, 10Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are available at about.etrade.com. This call will present information as of April 23, 2015. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. This call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. And with that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Idzik. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Scott. Good evening, and thank you for joining us. During the quarter, we posted healthy brokerage metrics with robust asset accumulation, and the team delivered enhancements to our service offerings, earning some welcomed recognition along the way, with all of this aimed at meeting our commitment to do more for our customers. Permit me to begin with our capital plan, since I recognize that it stands as a topic of more than passing interest to many of you. We entered 2015 with Coronets welcoming some key approvals from our regulators. These approvals underscored E*TRADE's progress across a number of fronts and ultimately facilitated the company's reduction of corporate debt to our target level. This represented a major milestone for our enterprise as we continue down the path of driving value for our owners. On last quarter's call, we announced the approval to move out our two broker-dealers from under the bank. In February, we completed the move of E*TRADE Securities, our introducing broker. Our plan remains on track to move the clearing broker in the second half of the year as we work through the intricacies of that transaction. Matthew will provide more details later. In conjunction with the move of our introducing broker, $434 million of capital became available to the parent, which we used to achieve the goal of reducing corporate debt to $1 billion. The most recent transaction brings our cumulative debt reduction to $740 million, which we completed in just 4 months. Looked at from another perspective, in the time since the company first submitted its capital plan in 2012, debt service costs have been reduced by more than 70% to just $50 million. Our three credit rating agencies have recognized these achievements with a total of 8 full-notch upgrades over the past 12 months, including 3 in conjunction with the March debt transaction. Each upgrade is encouraging as we continue to make strides towards our goal of becoming investment grade. With debt reduction behind us, we turn our focus to how we will next put our capital to work. For the first time in more than 5 years, we have a meaningful direct source of capital generation at the parent in the form of our introducing broker-dealer. And with our organizational realignment, clarity on bank capital ratios, and plans to continue requesting quarterly dividends from the bank, we are in an attractive position when it comes to putting more capital to work for our shareholders. With significant opportunities in front of us, we are evaluating how to most appropriately and effectively put capital to use. Turning to results. Excluding the early extinguishment of debt charge, we recorded earnings of 29 cents per share for the quarter on an income of $85 million. Our results were driven by solid customer engagement, including record-high margin loan balances, lower-than-expected provision, and a benefit to corporate interest expense from our March debt transaction. DARTs for the quarter were just shy of 170,000, up slightly from the prior quarter, but down 14% from last year's unusually buoyant Q1. Options represented approximately 23% of total trading activity, in line with trends over the past couple of years. We've seen a pullback in activity in April to date, with DARTs tracking down 6% from March. Margin balances grew by approximately $500 million to end the quarter at a record $8.2 billion. balances dipped at the beginning of the year, which is reflected in the quarterly average of $7.9 billion, but steadily rebounded in the latter half of the quarter. Our customers were net buyers of $3.1 billion of securities in the quarter, continuing the multi-year trend of customers putting their money to work. We added 39,000 net new brokerage accounts in Q1, up from 17,000 in the prior quarter, but down from 72,000 a year ago, which was a five-year record. Attrition of 8.8% improved from 9.1% in the prior quarter. Net new brokerage assets of $3.5 billion represented annualized growth of 5.7%. This matched our asset gathering from the prior quarter, but was down from a record $4.1 billion 1 year ago. This asset gathering is encouraging, especially when you consider the type of assets customers are bringing to E-Trade. Becoming known as a trusted place for investors to build their financial health is central for us, and we have devoted much time and energy to that side of the business. As a measure of our success, roughly one-fourth of our net new assets in the quarter were in retirement accounts. We closed out retirement season strong, ending Q1 with nearly $50 billion in retirement assets, up 11% from last year. A key component of growth here is advice-based solutions, and we are encouraged by how these assets continue to perform. Assets in managed accounts reached $3.2 billion this quarter, up an impressive 24% from a year ago. We also continued our steady drumbeat of customer-driven digital enhancements. These included making it easier for our customers to manage taxes related to their investments, creating an even better experience for our most active traders, and delivering more functionality to our already leading mobile platform. The new Tax Center delivers a more intuitive and helpful experience by centralizing tax documents and better positioning resources and education for cost-based reporting, gains and losses, and tax-efficient investing. We also made multiple improvements to E-Trade Pro, our platform for active traders, including tax lock trading, pattern day trading enhancements, and order entry updates, which when taken together deliver a more customized, intuitive, and hassle-free experience for our most active customers. With a record 13% of our total DARTs placed through our mobile application this quarter, we continue to fortify our position as a leader in mobile trading and investing, adding multi-leg options functionality, employee stock plan trading, and stock alerts, to name a few. Just weeks ago, we announced a meaningful step forward in the wearable space with our app for the Apple Watch. The app will deliver essential market data in an engaging and simple format to help investors and traders monitor their portfolios, watch lists, and the markets. It also includes handoff functionality that delivers a seamless transition from watch to phone. Our continuous improvements in leading-edge technology offerings are not going unnoticed as we receive a number of accolades from well-recognized external sources. Barron's rated us 4 out of 5 stars in their annual online broker survey, scoring high marks in research amenities and customer service and education. Stockbrokers.com gave us 3 first-place awards, number 1 smartphone app, number 1 client dashboard, and best new tool for E-Trade browser trading in their 2015 online broker review. In the same review, we earned 5 best-in-class ratings for offering of investments, investor education, research, mobile trading, and new investors. We were also recognized by Benzinga in their first annual FinTech Awards for our browser trading web app. And lastly, I recognize that I run the risk of being ungracious and boring you when I talk about the importance of risk. And my sermon on the subject hasn't changed. We've built out these capabilities. We're running a world-class ERM department, and risk management is at the heart of everything we do. To that end, I thought it was an opportune time to have our distinguished Chief Risk Officer, Michael Pizzi, join the call before handing things off to our pellucid CFO, Matthew Audette. Over to you, Mr. Pizzi.
Thank you, Mr. Itzik. I first want to take a moment to talk about the central role risk management plays here at E-Trade, and then I'll move into credit risk and an update on the legacy loan portfolio. In 2012, we devoted significant focus to bolstering our enterprise risk management as a key component of our capital plan. At the time, we had prudent and strong financial risk management, but significant work remained to establish a fulsome operational risk framework. We looked to a number of outside experts for input and best practices, and collectively determined that there was a need for much clearer and more robust governance, escalation, and root cause analysis. We have spent the past several years putting these systems and processes in place, in conjunction with building out robust and highly credible stress testing capabilities, as well as making significant enhancements in third-party oversight, model risk management, ongoing risk assessment, and monitoring. Our hard work has resulted in an enterprise risk management function that is consistent with that of much larger institutions. In practice, our ERM framework consists of three lines of defense. The first line, the various lines of business within the company. The second line, the risk organization, along with our colleagues in compliance and legal. And the third line, the internal audit group. We have built a coverage model where each area of the company's business has a dedicated partner in the risk, legal, and compliance areas. We have also worked to improve and develop the company's risk culture, having conducted workshops throughout the entire organization to ingrain risk management into the very fabric of our organization and to make sure each colleague knows they are risk owners within their respective areas. We have built a strong risk management culture, tying risk to performance measures down to the individual level. In short, risk management is part of everything we do at E-Trade. As you've heard Matt and Paul say before, the build-out is key, but sustainability is critical. The latter is how I would characterize the phase we are in today. Demonstrating the sustainability and effectiveness of the program we've worked so hard to install. And while I feel good about how far we've come, we will, of course, continue to fine-tune our practices to evolve both with the operating and regulatory landscapes. Now on to credit risk management, an important yet diminishing component of my role. The loan portfolio ended the quarter at $6.1 billion, down $317 million from the prior quarter. This was essentially all paydowns, as charge-offs were flat to the prior quarter at just $7 million. We expect quarterly runoff of the portfolio to remain in the 4% to 5% range throughout 2015. Provision for loan losses was $5 million in the first quarter, down from $10 million in the prior period. Matt will give you more color around our provision expectations, but clearly this quarter was better than we anticipated. As we navigate through the upcoming HELOC conversions throughout the remainder of this year and next, this will be the most prominent variable in determining our provision expense. Thus far, we have a very small sample of loans that have converted. They are generally our higher credit quality loans, and while they have largely performed more favorably than expected, it is very early days. As we approach a more meaningful amount of conversions, we are working with our servicers on proactive borrower outreach and loss mitigation where possible. Meanwhile, our allowance ended the quarter relatively unchanged at $402 million. The reserve shifted slightly with an increase in the 1-4 family book and a decrease in home equity. The 1-4 reserves increased $4 million to $31 million. Home equity reserves declined $7 million to end the quarter at $360 million. The decline related to better-than-expected performance following a planned servicer transfer for which we previously booked reserves. The transfer took place in February and is also the driving force behind the increase in early-stage delinquencies this quarter. We also had a planned servicer transfer in the 1-4 portfolio, which drove an associated increase in early-stage delinquencies. However, we did not recognize reserves for this transfer, as 1-4 loans typically self-correct, whereas the cure rate for home equity is much lower. So in summary, credit risk is becoming a smaller issue with each passing quarter, and we are proud of the progress we have made to become an institution known internally and externally as one that is serious about and committed to risk management. And with that, I'll turn the call over to Matt.
Thank you, distinguished Mike. We had a pretty tremendous start to the year. After a multi-year effort, our corporate debt is now where it belongs. And on top of that, we posted strong operating results driven by a number of factors. We reported first quarter net income of $85 million, or 29 cents per share, excluding a $73 million pre-tax charge related to our corporate debt transaction. Excluding a similar charge of $59 million in the prior quarter, this compares to net income of $78 million, or 26 cents per share, and net income of $97 million, or 33 cents per share in the year-ago quarter. Net revenues of $456 million were down from $461 million in the prior quarter and $475 million in the year-ago quarter. Revenue included net interest income of $271 million, down $8 million from the prior quarter, as net interest spread contracted 7 basis points, and our average assets increased approximately $200 million. Although spread contracted sequentially, at 262 basis points, it was above our expectations, as we once again benefited from elevated margin loan balances and strong securities lending results. After experiencing declines in both of these at the beginning of Q1, both trended upward in the second 2 months of the quarter. We also saw some spread compression as a result of a slight increase in prepayments and lower reinvestment rates on the securities portfolio. In the second quarter to date, rates continue to be challenging. If we hold today's environment constant, our net interest spread would be in the low to mid 250s in the second quarter. Our balance sheet ended the quarter at $46.8 billion, up $1.3 billion from the prior quarter. We completed the conversion of our sweep deposits to a new platform during the quarter and began to put it to work in March, moving $1.25 billion of customer deposits held by third-party banks back on our balance sheet. With this new platform, we can much more efficiently move deposits on and off balance sheet, giving us a powerful tool for managing balance sheet size. We have converted approximately $15 billion of our $42 billion in brokerage customer cash to the new platform. Of that $15 billion that is converted, a little under $4 billion is held by third-party banks, and a little over $11 billion is on our balance sheet. One component of our customer cash is money funds, where approximately $8 billion resides, largely as a result of our deleveraging efforts. We would ultimately like to move that portion into the sweep program, as it has benefits for both us and the customer. It's a more lengthy process involving system changes and customer consents, but we are working on it and we'll keep you posted. With the rollout of the new sweep platform, we've determined that classifying the revenue generated from off-balance sheet deposits in fees and service charges, as opposed to net interest income, is more consistent with how this type of revenue is generally presented within the industry. Accordingly, Q1 has about $5 million of reclassified revenue in this line, which is up from $4 million in the prior quarter and $3 million the year-ago quarter. For comparability purposes, prior periods have also been reclassified. Commissions, fees and service charges, and other revenue in the first quarter were $176 million, flat with the prior quarter and down 6% from the year-ago quarter. Average commission per trade of $10.94 increased 10 cents from the prior quarter and 30 cents from the year-ago period. The quarterly increase was driven by higher stock plan trading, while the year-over-year increase was driven by a more favorable options and customer mix. Fees and service charges revenues of $52 million included $23 million of payment for order flow, flat with the prior quarter. Net gains on loans and securities were $9 million this quarter, up from $6 million in the prior quarter, and in line with our expectations of $5 to $10 million. We stated last quarter that if rates remain low, we would likely be at the high end of the range, and that is exactly what you saw this quarter. Our operating expenses for the quarter were $300 million, up $6 million from the prior quarter, driven primarily by comp and ben, which reflected a seasonal increase. Our operating expenses for Q1 were well in line with our expectations, and we are still planning for full year 2015 expenses to increase in the low to mid single digits. As Mike discussed, provision for the quarter was $5 million. Given what we have experienced and the healthy reserves we maintain, we are adjusting our expected provision range for this year to 0 to $20 million per quarter, effectively expanding and lowering our prior range of 10 to $20 million. Looking ahead to 2016, we are also adjusting our expectations, now forecasting provision to land at or above the top end of our current range. This is slightly improved from our prior range of 20 to $30 million per quarter. However, I must caution the visibility into performance this far out is certainly limited, and we will adjust our expectations as we gain clarity. As Mike mentioned, HELOC conversions will be the most important variable here. There is still only a small population of loans that have actually converted. We will have more significant data throughout the year, as there are approximately $500 million of loans that will convert over the course of the next three quarters. We will then have $900 million converting next year, after which this event will largely be behind us. We will certainly keep you apprised of any trends that we see in the performance of these loans. Turning now to the capital plan. To reemphasize what Paul said earlier, We've accomplished a lot in 2015 already. To recap the first quarter, we utilized $432 million of corporate cash to pay down $340 million of debt and refinance another $460 million at 4 5/8%, the lowest coupon in the company's history, while extending our maturity profile by more than 2 years, with our nearest maturity now in 2022. Debt reduction was a central goal of the capital plan when we first laid it out in June of 2012. As we worked on our plans for a number of reasons, it became clear that $1 billion was the right amount. Now that we are sitting at $1 billion and with no more space on my shelf for debt deal toys, it feels good to be done talking about debt reduction and focusing on what is next. At the moment, we are working to ensure a smooth transition of our clearing broker from under the bank. Since this entity has been under the bank, it has benefited from a shared surplus of capital and liquidity. As we prepare to move it out, we have to establish and formalize new lines of liquidity, even though these may ultimately remain undrawn. In conjunction with this, we are also evaluating whether it makes sense to move additional capital into that entity. So the bottom line is that until we determine how E-Trade Clearing will be situated from a capital and liquidity standpoint, it is prudent to wait on further capital actions. As a reminder, we intend to move the entity in the second half of this year. With the approval to manage the bank at a 9% Tier 1 leverage ratio, we ended the quarter nicely above that threshold at 9.8%. The implementation of Basel III benefited that ratio by approximately 90 basis points. Keep in mind that this still includes E-Trade Clearing and its existing capital and assets. Excluding it would have decreased our ratio by approximately 10 basis points. So on a pro forma basis, we have approximately $240 million of capital in excess of our regulatory threshold at the bank. As a reminder, we plan to request quarterly dividends from the bank to the parent equal to its prior quarter net income. In Q1, net income for the bank was $92 million. Also during Q1, E-Trade Securities generated approximately $50 million in excess capital, which we plan to move to the parent next week. So to echo Paul, we are in a position of strength when it comes to the capital available to us, and we are very deliberately working through how to most appropriately put it to use. I don't have specifics for you today, but I would like to offer my thoughts on a few of the options. To start, under our new structure, we will have capital available for use at both the bank and the parent. At the bank, we will have the ability to utilize capital in excess of our 9% Tier 1 leverage ratio. Our most prominent options include balance sheet growth and the acceleration of legacy risk reduction, meaning potentially eliminating wholesale funding obligations ahead of schedule and selling the remainder of the loan portfolio. While neither of these actions are in our plans today, we are constantly assessing the path forward as it relates to legacy risks. At the parent, we have the ability to utilize capital from the broker, plus the planned quarterly dividend request equivalent to the bank's net income. Obvious uses include share buybacks, dividends, and investing in the business where we see opportunity for healthy returns. For a little more detail on these items, balance sheet growth is certainly an option, especially in a more attractive rate environment than the one we find ourselves in today. We ended the quarter with $46.8 billion of assets, up $1.3 billion from the prior quarter, which is largely the result of the implementation of our new sweep deposit program. So we still have some room to utilize capital by growing the balance sheet while staying below $50 billion, which remains our intention. On wholesale funding, we ended the quarter at $4.6 billion, with $365 million scheduled to expire, primarily in the second half of this year. The cost to eliminate these borrowings would be approximately $450 million pre-tax, which is essentially the acceleration of future costs, so relatively neutral from an economic standpoint. While there are certain benefits of accelerating the path toward normalized earnings, there are also other considerations which we would need to work through. Incurring a loss of this magnitude at the bank could have implications for the capital plan and intercompany tax sharing arrangements. Additionally, keep in mind that the duration profile of wholesale funding is generally longer than that of our deposits, impacting the economic benefit analysis of replacing wholesale with deposits. In short, our current position is to keep this funding source on our books. However, we are doing the work across multiple complex dimensions to determine if this should change. The loan portfolio is a similar story. It is still our intention to hold those loans on our books, as that is precisely where we believe the value is maximized. However, as they continue to season and the risks become more visible, we are keeping a watchful eye on the secondary market. The bottom line is they are worth more today to hold on to. But if the secondary market for our portfolio were to firm up significantly, our thinking could change. Now, turning to capital at the parent. With the introducing broker-dealer directly under the parent, we have a more definitive source of capital and some additional flexibility for how we put our capital to use. At quarter end, we had $258 million in parent cash, approximately $150 million above our target of 2 years debt service coverage of $100 million. Over the near term, at least, our flexibility here is limited by other considerations, including covenants within our corporate debt, which will be a factor as long as our credit rating is sub-investment grade. And obviously, our board and regulators are constituencies that are involved in these matters. What I want you to take from all of this is that we have some items to work through. And as we have throughout the course of our capital plan progress, we will update you when appropriate. But I can assure you that our objective is to deploy this capital in a way that maximizes value for our shareholders. In summary, and speaking for the entirety of our management team at E-Trade, we are full steam ahead. We have checked a number of exceptional accomplishments off our to-do list already, and we are eager to keep moving down this track. And with that, operator, we will open the call for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone, and you will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question is from mine, Rich Repetto with Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed.
Yeah, good evening, and first, congrats on all the progress you've made on the capital plan. I guess the first question is for Mr. Pellucid, the CFO, and it has to do with the clearing, and you mentioned the capital use, the potential capital usage for the clearer as you move it out from underneath the bank. And I guess the question is, can you frame that at all as far as what you think the high end could be, or, you know, what the range could be, because it's really difficult. I don't have a feel for, you know, what the even potential could be. And then also the DTA, I believe you recognized $240 million of a benefit from the DTA. Could you verify that as well?
Yeah, sure, Rich. So the DTA, you've got right. If you remember last quarter, and specifically down at the bank, we had about $600 million, half of which was included in capital. And looking at where we are today, the majority of it's included in capital. So I think that number used is correct. On the clearing side, I mean, I don't have specific numbers for you, but I would say that the vast majority of what we are working on is making sure it has external lines of credit appropriate for its size and activity. And at most broker-dealers, those lines of credit typically remain undrawn. As I said, we are also looking at the capital side of things, but I would say that the vast majority of the things that we need to set up are on the liquidity side, not the capital side. So hopefully they give you some directional comfort, but without a number.
Okay. And I guess just one follow-up. With the improved guidance on the provision going forward, was that a result of you probably said it, but I didn't get it, but the early indications from the home equity loan amortization and the results you saw so far, I didn't get what the driver was there.
Yeah, well, we'll let Mr. Distinguished take that one.
It's a number of factors. You know, as we move through, new loans move into the period of the allowance, we look at the behavior of credit of the loans of the period, and essentially we are coming in better than expected.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Rich.
And our next question is from Alex Blostein with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Great. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Alex.
Lots of great detail there. Appreciate all the color there. So just a couple of quick follow-ups, I guess, on capital. I think there's so I understand you guys are going to be distributing all the capital, all the net income from the bank into the holdco. Can you give us a sense of what the difference is on kind of pro forma run rate basis between capital generation versus net income at the bank? I.e., you know, there seems like there might be some extra capital buildup still at the bank even after you guys distribute it to the holdco.
Yeah, sure, Alex. I think the in the past, the majority of that difference was really driven by the DTA benefit. Now under Basel III, and kind of building off of Rich's observation or comment, the majority of that is now already included in capital. So when you think about capital generation at the bank, there could still be a little bit more, but I would say it's going to be much closer to earnings than it was in the past because the DTA is pretty much included in capital now.
Got it. Just double checking that. And then as far, I guess, as just the process goes from deploying capital both out of the bank as well as out of the holdco on a go-forward basis, and I understand you guys are evaluating lots of options and the timing might be, might differ. But the way the regulators will approach this topic with you guys, just maybe give us a sense of, you know, how onerous would it be for you to take capital actions out of the holdco now that a lot of capital sits out of the bank? Would you have to talk to the same regulators, or is it perhaps might be a little bit easier to do out of the holding company? And then with respect to breaking wholesale funding at the bank, would you have to get a pretty, you know, explicit, check from the regulators, I guess, to do that?
Alex, I want to be careful how we answer this, just so that we're clear about it. We have constant dialogue with our regulators, whether it's Matthew covering our progress on the capital plan, whether it's Mr. Peasy covering how we're doing on certain risks and how we're doing building risk elements out. And so whether something requires a formal notification or otherwise, we are working with the regulators on our plans and the direction we're taking. So I don't think of it as onerous as otherwise. With the clarity in our bank capital ratios that we've recently achieved, it just makes having some of those discussions take place just more quickly, simply because the parameters are much clearer and because we've continued to work on making sure that our regulatory standing is what it should be. So is it any easier? I'm not sure it's any easier or not easier. I think it's just clearer the direction we're traveling, and I would say that both the board and the regulators are provided with the clarity that's required, and there's good dialogue all the way around. So there's no surprises and sort of no sudden movements.
Got it. Understood. Thanks.
And our next question is from Chris Harris with Wells Fargo. Please proceed.
Thanks. Hey, guys. Matt, thanks for all the detail as always. Just a few follow-up clarification items. The off-balance sheet deposits, I just want to make sure we have it correct. How much of that total could you guys, you know, theoretically access? Assuming, I know you don't want to go over the $50 billion asset threshold, but what is really readily accessible today or in a short period of time?
Yeah, so I think I highlight a couple things there. One, keep in mind we moved $1.25 billion on balance sheet during the quarter. So we have in the new sweep program I highlighted, we have $15 billion, of which $4 billion is off balance sheet today. You wouldn't bring all that back because there's a decent amount of it that's off balance sheet for FDIC insurance purposes. So I would think about a portion of the four from a max possible perspective, a portion of the four. And then in addition to that, over the long term, which we're working on, is that $8 billion or so in money funds that ultimately we would want to have into the program, which would then give us the flexibility. So hopefully it gives you some color there.
It does. Yep, thank you. And then a few on capital. Last quarter, when you guys announced the separation of securities and clearing, I thought we were showing that about $900 million of capital was going to clearing. Is that, you know, still a good rough estimate about what might be there? And that's one question. And then the other is, how much capital is sitting in securities today?
So on the clearing side, that's a good estimation, but keep in mind it's got its own balance sheet. So from an impact to a capital ratio standpoint, it's only going to reduce the leverage ratio at the bank by about 10 basis points. And as far as E-Trade securities go, it generated about $50 million of excess capital, and that's what we plan to move next week.
Okay, great. And last question, just a kind of a bigger picture question, I suppose. You know, all of the work you guys have done in risk management, you've certainly highlighted that on tonight's call. How do you guys think that positions you when the day comes where you want to kind of exceed the $50 billion threshold at the bank? I mean, we know a lot of other smaller banks getting into some trouble just because they didn't seem to have had a robust system. And I'm just trying to get my arms around, you know, whether all the work you guys have done has really put you in a good spot there.
Well, Chris, as you know, and I think we've been fairly pointed on this topic in past calls, we have no intention to go over $50 billion in any time frame that could be considered near term. I would say that the enterprise risk management capabilities we've built out puts us in a position where, should we ever decide to do that, that we would just be beginning from a stronger base than we would otherwise. And as we continue to do the things under Mr. PZ's aegis to continue sustaining and strengthening and using the trim tabs to adjust based upon the environment and what our regulatory requirements are, we'll maintain a posture that says, should we wish to do that, we'll have a very good idea of what we need to do. We'll have some credibility with the regulators. We'll get good counsel from the regulators. So we feel we're in a stronger position to move in a direction we want to, should that ever occur.
Understood. Thank you.
And our next question is from Mike Carrier with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Matt, just on the if I look at what you said in terms of what you guys have the flexibility at both, like, the bank and the parent, your priorities, you know, when you're looking at those options, are you analyzing them, you know, based on what you can do, like, at the bank and then separately at the parent? Or if one of those opportunities, let's just take, you know, the wholesale funding, is the most attractive once you do the analysis and you get the approvals, you know, can you use, you know, the amount of capital that it would be necessary, you know, to do that? Or, you know, I mean, is it, you know, more of a separate, you know, decision based on, you know, where the capital resides?
Yeah, so it's almost both, Mike. So the issue is when you look at our plans, we've got excess capital at the bank that we could utilize. We also have capital up at the parent. But using, I think, wholesale is a perfect example. To the extent we did that down at the bank, and the reason that we're spending a lot of time analyzing this, there could be repercussions up at the parent. As an example, our intentions to request the bank's prior quarter earnings as a dividend. Well, if we took out wholesale, that's a $450 million pre-tax loss down at the bank. And then you also have intercompany tax sharing arrangements that could be impacted as well. So it's kind of, yes, we look at them separately, but certain transactions can impact the other. So there's a lot of work to do here. We are working on it to understand it, but there's a lot of work to do.
Okay, thanks. And then just a follow-up, based on what the DOL put out on the fiduciary standard, just wanted to get a sense in the different, you know, businesses that E-Trade's in, you know, do you see, you know, any, you know, potential impacts? You know, and obviously it's a proposal, it's early. And then on the flip side, you know, any areas of, you know, potential opportunities?
Well, we're working through all the documents and statements and assessing how the evolving standards may impact our business. Given our model, we don't expect that impact to be too extreme, but we're doing more work both internally and externally to fully understand the implications. Overall, you know, our intention is to work to do what's best for our customers each day, irrespective of any regulatory changes. So we're going to continue to keep a watchful eye and see what changes may come through with the final rules, and then update what we do as appropriate.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And our next question is from Bulent Ozcan with RBC. Please proceed.
Thank you. There've been many positive developments on the regulatory perspective, which is great. You know, I spent a lot of time going through my initiation, going through the various risk factors and disclosures, and I've noticed that there's an understanding or memorandum of understanding at the bank. Could you give us an update on this MOU and any other restrictions that you're under? Are there any new developments as of recently?
Well, let me first put a little bit of context around this, and congratulations on doing your homework. MOUs, they lay out a number of actions which an institution such as ours agrees to undertake with their supervisors. And many of these are really meat and potatoes tasks, you know, things we need to do, things we need to put in place. But importantly, these have to be seasoned with the right culture and the right attitude. I'm pleased to confirm that we've satisfied the OCC's requirements and that we are no longer subject to that MOU. But I also want to emphasize that we have close and continuous supervision from our two chief banking regulators, that's the OCC and the Fed, and maintaining good regulatory standing remains a priority of this management team. So as the environment and our business evolves, so logically will regulatory expectations, and we'll give those our full attention. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And maybe a second question, if I may. So now that you've optimized your sweep program, I'm just wondering, maybe it's a different, you know, angle at the previous question, but so what sort of buffer would you need, you know, to stay below the $50 billion threshold, and just given the sweep program optimization? And also, in terms of the changes, how long does it take you now to basically transfer monies to third-party institutions and then back again to you? Just about for duration, you know, is that a much faster process, and what kind of buffer do we need?
Yeah, so on the buffer, I mean, when just using the under the old program where customer activity drove the amount of deposits that were on or off balance sheet, meaning it was outside of our control, we wanted a fairly decent buffer, which is why you've seen us run at $45, $46 billion for quite some time. Under the new program, you know, which is impacted by the time, your second question, timing, which I'll answer, but under the new program, you know, to oversimplify it, we really just choose our balance sheet size. And again, I'll repeat it, it's oversimplifying, but it's in that ballpark. So I think our comfort on a buffer is much closer to 50, but it is absolutely a number below 50. So we'll see that where that takes us now. Meaning in the, you know, call it the 49 range. With respect to timing, the timing is relatively efficient. And if you in your I think in your research and your initiation coverage, discussing all the different things that we did from a deleveraging standpoint, those took a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of individual negotiations with banks. So months and months and months to get in place. Whereas now it's literally just planning with our third-party sweep service provider about when and how we want balances to be on and off balance sheet. So it is incredibly quick and efficient from a timing standpoint as well.
I understand. And then maybe a final one that'll leave for me. But so if you think about your systems that you have in place, and I'm not suggesting that it should be over $50 billion in terms of the threshold, but could you go over your systems and your ERM and how much – you know, it could actually handle in terms of the balance sheet size. Would you need to add a lot more in terms of capital expenditures and investments into your business to build that system at this point?
Yeah, we've scaled, you know, built an ERM platform that is scalable. I mean, we knew where we were balance sheet size when we set out on this journey. That said, there are some very specific things you need to do as you become larger. Those things will have costs that need to be built out. Probably the easiest one you can point to is always the resolution plan. But there are lots of other things that we can go through. There are things that have that will then drive explicit investment. But we've built the underlying platform to be scalable, and so knowing that growth is important. But keep in mind Matt's comments around the wholesale funding and other items. There's plenty of flexibility to accommodate that growth and remain under $50 billion.
I understand. No. Thank you much for taking my questions. Appreciate it.
And our next question is from Christian Bolu with Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Good morning, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Good. Okay. So just a lot of noise around robo-advisors here, and I think one of your peers gave a fairly upbeat update earlier this morning on one of the new offerings. I know you have one of your own. So just curious if you're seeing increased flows into your offering, and as you look at the, you know, as you assess, you know, some of the new competitive offerings out there, if you think there's anything you need to add from a capability perspective to your current offering.
Yes. Thanks for the question. It's certainly a topic du jour in the industry right now, and we've offered those capabilities given our heritage, which is intending to make the playing field level for small investors to be able to compete with bigger investors and bigger traders. So our heritage has always been to put the educational resources and the tools in the hands of our customers. So we've had robo-advisory capabilities built into our platform for quite some time. Now, frankly, I'm a bit disappointed that we haven't marketed this capability as well as we might, and there are some additional capabilities we're working on building into our robo-advisory platform, but we're pretty satisfied that today we have the core tools we need, and we'll be building out more as we have when some of the other things you've heard us winning awards on. So thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Just a couple of cleanup questions, Matt. Just on the risk-weighted assets for the total firm, pretty steep decline in transition to Basel III. Was that just the margin loans being risk-weighted to zero, or was something else driving that?
Yep, you got it. Margin loans.
Okay, pretty simple. And then consultant headcount fell pretty sharply in the quarter. It's a small number, but just curious if anything is going on there.
Yeah, nothing's going on. Some cleanup in the metric. We had some heads in there that weren't really consultants. They were just third-party providers that really shouldn't have been in that headcount. So really a cleanup in the metric, no change in costs or anything like that.
Great. Okay. Thank you guys for taking my questions.
Sure.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Dan Fannon with Jefferies. Please proceed.
Thanks. A question on the loan portfolio and just clarifying, I think, some of the comments about the uptick in the early stage delinquencies with regards to the change in servicing or change in servicers. So does that mean that all else equal, a normalized number would have been lower, and we could think about that progression through this year? Is I'm just trying to think about how we should think about this as a starting point versus where we can go from throughout this year.
Yeah, there were a number of servicing transfers that occurred in the quarter. Both in the home equity book as well as in the 1-4 family. In the home equity portfolio, because of our history with those transfers, we increased a reserve around that in prior quarters. The actual performance came in better. That's what the note that we highlighted. That's related. That is essentially flowing through. In the 1-4 book, there were also transfers. The transfers there also are affecting the delinquency levels, but we expect those to fully cure.
Okay. And then just thinking about the comments for March and the actual trading activity, I think 6% down for March. Wondering, from March and April, and then if you could talk about margin balances in April, and then generally, your expense guidance is still the same. If activity levels continue to kind of decline and you're in a little bit more of a softer environment from a revenue perspective, how are you thinking about the cost guidance in that backdrop?
Yeah, Dan, so on margin, without giving you a number, margin has been consistent with the prior quarter, which it remains strong. So it has not moved backwards like we saw on the trading side. On expenses, and I think a good opportunity to just, to take in our overall P&L and where and how we make our money. Each quarter that goes by, when you look at the distribution of our earnings, where trading commissions fall out is not an enormous driver of our bottom line. From the amount we make on deposits, from the amount we make on margin and stock loan, to the growing amount of fees and service charges from our managed products and programs. So I think the growth and the diversification of our business model is really providing many opportunities, including not having to start projects when trading's up and stop them when it's down. So a long way of saying I think we feel quite comfortable with the expense guidance.
Great. Thank you.
And our last registered question at this time is from Joel Jeffrey with KBW. Please proceed.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey, Joel.
So most of my questions have been asked, but just curious, I know you guys have been talking about for the last couple of quarters being able to move the total earnings from the bank. or making a request to move the last quarter's earnings in, from the bank into the parent company. But I'm just curious, have you already received regulatory approval to do that, and is it just a function of actually making the request? And is there any risk that, that the regulator would say no to this?
Yeah, Joel, so that, like, every step on the capital plan, we need individual approvals. So the plan is to request the prior quarter's earnings, but we need to get approval each and every step along the way. So no approvals until we get them.
Okay, so okay. So is there any level of risk that a regulator would say no to this?
Well, I think the level of risk is on us to execute our plans well. And I think we need to focus on that and continue to do it. And I think the capital plan and successes under it will follow. So I think it's on us to execute.
Great. Thanks for taking my question.
And we have a question from Devin Ryan with JMP Securities. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks. Good afternoon. Most of mine were asked as well. But just coming back to the securities yields and I guess the net interest spread overall, just given kind of the ongoing pressure on securities yields, you know, still occurring this quarter, you know, I know the securities book management is dynamic, but, you know, have you guys made any changes to where you're targeting duration and putting new cash to work? And then also appreciate the color on the net interest spread and what that will look like if rates hold constant into the second quarter. But if we look beyond the second quarter, how much more compression, you know, could we expect into the back half of the year if you know, rates weren't to move from here?
Yeah, so Devin, no changes on where we're deploying cash. You know, our philosophy here is really to manage a balance sheet off of the duration of the deposits coming in. So that's where we're focused. With respect to where spread's going, I mean, there's only two data points I have for you, which is the low to mid 250s for next quarter, and then ultimately migrating up to 300 basis points in a normalized environment. The steps along the way, you'll just have to wait for another data point next quarter.
Okay, fair enough. And then just with respect to the clearing sub and when that moves, I know the margin balances will move as well. Are there any other considerations on the asset side that we should think about?
Yeah, stock borrow as well. So that's, I mean, it's not a dramatic number, less than $1 billion, but the stock lending book goes along with it.
Right, exactly. Okay, good. Thanks, guys.
Okay, that's it for the questions, and I'll turn it back to Mr. Idzik.
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of Mike Pizzi and Matthew Audette, I'd like to thank all of you for dialing in and your interest and questions, and I hope you have a good rest of the evening. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask you to please disconnect your line.